This episode and all of our South by Southwest coverage is brought to you by Blackmagic Design. Hey everybody, this is John Fusco, and you're listening to the No Film School podcast. Barry Jenkins once said, "Art is inherently political. Even trying to make a film that has nothing to do with politics is, in and of itself, a political act." Unfortunately for filmmakers, not everyone these days will jump at the chance to see a movie that advertises its own inherently political nature. So how do you subvert an audience's expectations with a film like The Wall of Mexico? The title itself implies one of the most controversial issues facing the United States of America today. Director Zachary Kotler and Magdalena Zizak would say that the first step lies in staying ahead of the audience. How do you stay ahead of an audience expecting a social issues movie? Don't write a movie explicitly about social issues. That's exactly what the directing partners did with their South by Southwest standout. The film is heavy on magical realism and doesn't beat the audience over the head with any one single message. As Kotler and Zizak put it, ambiguity is a part of their artistic creed, and it's one that benefits the social issues narrative genre greatly. In what is a subversive plot in and of itself, The Wall of Mexico tells the story of a wealthy Mexican family who decides to build a wall around their ranch to stop American townspeople from stealing their well water. I sat down with the cast and directors to discuss the art and importance of subtlety, casting for a low-budget feature, and messing with audience expectations. Enjoy. All right. Hey, everybody. This is John, and I'm here with a lot of people from a movie called The Wall of Mexico. The Wall of Mexico. Great. And I'm actually going to have you guys introduce yourselves. There's a lot of you, but I want the listeners to get familiar with your voices. So if you could just say your name and your role in the project, that would be fantastic.
I'm Zachary Kotler. I wrote it and directed it with Magdalena Zizak.
I'm Magdalena Zizak. I'm the other director.
I'm Marisol Sacramento, and I play Tanya.
I'm Carmela Zumbato, and I play Jimena.
I'm Jackson Rathbone. I play Dawn.
I'm Xander Berkeley, and I play Mike.
I'm Alex Meneses, and I play Monica.
Great. So I'm going to start with a question for the writers and directors. I read the description for this movie, and I was fully expecting to come into a Cormac McCarthy-esque sort of situation where, you know, it was a border trilogy thing where it's a family class struggle with sort of a cowboy and some Mexican family having land struggles working on a farm, and it wasn't what I got. But
you have perfectly described our film so
yeah.
far.
Yeah, exactly. So it really like is a McCarthy-esque sort of storyline, but you guys do something completely different with it. So I was wondering if you guys could actually just describe the project in your own words, what you were trying to accomplish, the plot, etc.
Sure. We were attempting to take a very cliched political situation that we're all very familiar with right now and turn it not just on its head in some sort of obvious oppositional way or just like a, you know, through the looking glass, the exact mirror image, but to go through enough looking glasses that we end up in a place that is not recognizable. Mostly just because things have become so unrecognizable. Reality itself is under such duress at the moment that perhaps it's the case that if you want art to say something meaningful in a time of no reality, you need to go through so many looking glasses to start to actually get back to some kind of authentic message. That's the hope. I don't know if we've achieved it, but that's the design.
No, yeah, I definitely feel that. And, you know, I have a question about, you know, how you are able to, as a writer, write with political undertones in a subtle way rather than beating people over the head. What are some strategies that you used in doing that, in keeping yourself on check so that this wasn't just a heavy-handed sort of political piece?
I think the main way of approaching that was through Xander's character Mike and through Carmela's character Jimena, both of these characters who are sort of on opposite sides of the wall, as it were, these two characters are tricksters that stand outside of any kind of particular political situation. And I think any time we might veer toward a particular ideology that is cut and dry, these characters become sort of like meta-contextualizers of the film. And they're sort of like they stand back a little bit. They're observing mm-hmm. type characters. They're more at cause than effect. I don't know if you guys want
to. Yeah, do you guys want to speak to that a little bit? Just sort of the role of the trickster?
I'll say quickly one of the thoughts that went through my mind about wanting to do the film, and apropos what Zach was saying and something you talked about before we started, just the upsetting of expectation. I think whether if you're this audience is young filmmakers, the more you can not hit the audience over the head, but maybe stay ahead of the audience. And one of the best ways of engaging is to upset expectation. As an actor, I've always preferred, whenever possible, to play against the obvious so that they aren't sure what road they're going to, so you can take them down to a different destination than they had anticipated, so that they're not predicting what's going to happen before it happens, so they're forced to keep paying attention.
Mm-hmm, right.
And the film does that on its own, and having an opportunity to play a character that within that, a film that's doing that, to get to continue that contradiction and that kind of... I don't know. I think life is fraught with contradiction, and we're always being told what to think and who people are and what things are, and it's always not just that.
Right, totally.
I mean, I would also add that ambiguity has been a part of our artistic creed so far, and overall, it seems like both politics and art and culture in general has become a little bit too simplistic. In a sense, everything has become a sort of theater with Manichaean forces, like forces of good and evil fighting on the internet, and everyone sort of enjoying the spectacle. So our goal was to complicate things. You know, I think there's a goal of art and cinema overall.
I think that one of the ways that you managed to do that in the film is through the dialogue and sort of the long waxing philosophical passages and how they're sort of interspersed with jokey, light, like, sparse dialogue. Can you talk a little bit about your writing process in that sense? And also from an acting perspective, you know, how would it, you know, you'd switch from these like very heady philosophical topics to almost a like fantastical sprite character, I guess.
What really drew me to the script, it was so dialogue driven, which is not something you see all the time. There was this melody of words that pushed every scene, and it was rare. You know, you're as an actress, we're reading, and an actor, you're reading all of these scripts, and this one's stuck. And there was temporally, it was fascinating. And then there are those switches, which the directors helped me find. It's like so nuanced. There's a line and you see it one way, but it's prismatic. And they said, hey, how about you look at it from this way? And I said, oh. And then you build a character based on that.
And that's what Xander's talking about an actor's choices being against what the expected choice would be, right? Like you ideally want to get an actor to, if something is sad, you don't want them to act sad. Mm-hmm. You know, that's like the most basic example. And this thing, as Marisol says, it's prismatic. It's not happening in primary colors. It's happening in tertiary colors. So
it's almost as if the dialogue informs the emotion itself rather than having to like fully act it out. You get it through the words of the character in a way.
I mean, I also think that the truth about human behavior is that it's extremely complicated, and we actually like to think about it in percentages. So let's say you feel something, but you're 30% sad and 30% self-ironizing and 30% just hungry, you know, you're thinking about lunch. So our behaviors are sums of that, of all those percentages, and it's the same with actors, you know, and the motivations are changing, they're continuously malleable, and we're not even often aware of all the chemical impulses that are behind our motivations.
So it's
the same with acting and directing. Yeah.
How do you keep your actors in check, or just trying to remember that throughout the process of filmmaking?
It completely depends on the actors. In this group, that's not an issue. Mm-hmm. There's no there was no question with anyone at this table of keeping them in check. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, it's hard. I think, you know, from a film school perspective, I think, which was really intriguing about this. I love this. I wish I would have had this when I was 18 or 17.
Did you go to film school?
I didn't. Nope. I moved out to L.A. when I was 18.
There you go.
Film school was getting a chance to be in movies and learning from everyone I've ever worked with, either my senior or my juniors, people younger than or older than me. But one thing I think is fascinating as an actor... and I would love to impart to other actors, is there's you don't need to be the character as much as you need to be in the moment. And, you know, the director is going to cast you if you're right for the project. It's not so much like what you've done wrong. It's just if you're right or not for it. And there's so many times in life where I've met people that are, you know, get down on themselves because they didn't get the part. But it's really about just existing in the moment and utilizing the words, because they're gonna edit, they're gonna add music, like everything comes together in a film. It's not one thing. The film is a watch, you know, like on your wrist, you know, it's a wristwatch. Like, you don't see all the components that really make it move. You only see the face of the watch. You see, you know, like the film as it is, but everything in there really makes it. And I think doing something like this, getting to work with other incredible actors and just trusting one another and being in the moment and experiencing rather than directing an audience where to go or to like be like, I'm sad now, so we're going to be playing the sad. It's like, no, we're going to have an experience, and maybe I am hungry because Zach and Magdalena want to keep shooting and lunch was 30 minutes ago. But utilizing that hunger in a way, I mean, that's life. That's life as we know it is a series of just events that happen, and either you go along with it or you fight it. And if you're in the ocean and you're fighting the current, you're going to drown. Oh, I got. You didn't see this, but I'm gonna say, Marisol just looked at me and she did the wow. Okay, she came. Thank you.
Now everyone believes that.
You just blew my fucking mind, Jackson.
I was just gonna ask a little bit about the casting process itself, because you know, I think Jackson, what you were hinting on about how there needs to be an enormous amount of trust in the room to really be able to get to these places, to be able to find the right people, I think takes a lot of time, and it's kind of a mystifying process to me. So I was wondering if maybe you could explain a little bit about the casting process of this film, because everyone gave such strong performances and was so able to trust each other.
Well, for the role of Tanya and Jimena, we saw hundreds and hundreds of girls, actresses in New York and LA, and it was very hard because we always look for someone with more complexity. You know, we try to find actors who sort of subvert the typical Hollywood mode of acting. And for example, Marisol, we had a conversation on Skype, and she had a very interesting breed of neuroticism about her. She seemed almost like Blanche DuBois from A Streetcar Named Desire, and she wore a golden tiara on her head and kept spouting facts from different novels she read. So I felt like, well, this is Tanya, you know?
Yeah.
And do you want to talk about the rest?
Yeah, I mean, the other thing we did is we cast Marisol first. She didn't know this, but then we used her as bait to get Jimena, and then we brought other, because Marisol didn't know that we were like leaning toward her for Tanya, and so we brought other women in to play against her, and Carmela was the only person who could handle her, because she had to be the oldest. Like, Carmela's playing a very intellectual, a very heady woman who does have like a completely wild younger sister. And so we had to see them in a room together to see who could handle Marisol already getting into character. And
she sat on top of me during our chemistry read. And that's how we knew she was just.
She did. Oh yeah, I forgot about that. She like climbed into your lap.
She climbed into my lap, and I just knew right then that I didn't know she was cast yet, but I knew she was Tanya. It was just such a blessing to be able to play opposite her, because I never had to in any moment ever doubt that she was fully in character or that she was right for this, or she really was able to provide a really beautiful foundation for our relationship, and I think that's definitely conveyed in the film, and I really credit that to her.
We had already cast Alex at this point, so we also needed to find women who appeared like you would all be in a family together. I think we achieved that.
Yeah, totally.
I feel by now everyone is a family with our actors. It was a bit challenging in the beginning, because there's this almost unspoken familiarity between people that's very hard to reproduce on screen. You know, I mean, you see families on screen all the time and you just don't believe in them. Mm-hmm. And it's often because people are too formal with each other.
It's true. As a filmmaker, you're scared to exclude the audience because you want to include the audience, right? It's just a knee-jerk instinct. And yet, if you're dealing with families and you've ever spent any time with anyone else's family, you immediately feel entirely excluded by their private language, et cetera. And so the trick is to trust that your audience while being excluded by the private language that's going on the screen, isn't going to think you're leaving them out of the story, because that's in fact how families behave. Mm-hmm. And everyone is, and people are included in this because everyone knows the experience of going to someone else's house and seeing people make reference to things they have no idea what it is.
Right, you can actually be included by being excluded. You know, you might not know what is going on exactly, but you feel there is a certain authenticity going on that you recognize from your own familial experience. Mm-hmm.
These sort of undertones that pervade the film reminded me a lot of fantasy. Can you talk about how you used fantasy in a way to sort of maybe, you know, subvert the audience's expectations of what a political film could be, but in a way also used it to drive home the political points that you were trying to drive home?
Sure. I mean, I think you're referring to maybe the mythic structure, like of the
the story in general.
I mean, one thing we were doing is because we're using Mexican and American, like a border story, right? We played with the conquistador myth of the Fountain of Youth, mm-hmm. Which is also one of the original American myths, right? Because you know the Spanish explorers came to the United States. Some of them were looking for a magic well, So that was like one of the really early seeds of the project. And I think that's maybe where what you mean by fantasy. I think maybe that myth is where that idea, because of course, like the United States was originally, much of the United States was originally a Spanish colony. Mm-hmm. So the whole story between the United States and Mexico is very, very old. And it's so old that it has its own mythic structures.
Did the I know you guys yesterday in the talkback you said that you handled more of the script and acting and you handled more of the visual language of the film. Visually, what did you what choices did you make to sort of drive home that sort of surreal or fantastical feeling? I know you shot on LOMO, like anamorphic lenses, and there was some mm-hmm. peacock lighting. I wonder if you could talk
right,
a little bit more about that.
It's a bit difficult to summarize the whole process, but Lynn Moncrief and we used a lot of photo references, for example, inspired by Saul Leiter and Guy Bourdin for some of our frames. And I personally like to think about a scene as a series of stills, and then your goal is to arrive at those stills. So whatever material comes in between the stills is more malleable, and depending on what is going on the day, with the light, with the set, and you often find your shots, but it's important to have a set of shots already pre-planned. And in terms of color, we always planned to have it sort of paradisical in nature. It was supposed to be like a peacock's tail, like an explosion of some sort of a utopian fantasy almost. And that started with the production design and later color grading.
Great. Well, I just got the wrap-up symbol, but I do want to ask... I want to ask you guys if you have any final word of advice or final golden piece of advice for emerging filmmakers and actors, so we can all go around and everyone can get a chance to close it out.
When I started back in the prehistoric days, I was, there wasn't a whole lot for Latina women. I played a lot of whores and a lot of cops, and things are changing little by little. And I would say stay with it. Keep an open mind.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Well, if the experience of this film applies to that question, it's tell a story worth telling. Have something to say. And then try and find a completely original way of saying it so that mm-hmm. you're not trying to appeal to someone else's voice, but liberate your own in a way.
Was it like that Nike slogan?
Just do it.
I mean, it's as simple as that. There's so many people out there second-guessing themselves constantly, rewriting and rewriting and rewriting, or thinking that I can always make it better, but your next one's going to be better, and the next one. And always, always be a student. Never think that you're a master. I think that's some of the people that I've looked up to my whole life are always evolving. And I think that's important to remember.
I think being in film school is such a great thing. And I went to film school, and I think it's really important to not just to get outside of your scope. So if you're a director, sit in on an acting class, take an acting class so you know how to speak to them, you know, to take a writing class and see it from all the angles that you can.
I might actually follow up on what Marisol just said, because I think very good advice is maybe even to go further afield than that, maybe not even as a director going to an acting class, but I mean, I think what's missing is that screenwriters don't study history and psychology. That's crucial.
When you're writing characters, especially,
Yeah, I mean, I agree with this advice. One of the biggest, as Zachary's advice, one of the biggest problems today is that everyone goes to film school and everyone learns how to make films, but nobody knows what to make films about, in a sense, right? Because filmmaking is nothing else but a craft. And it used to be that people came to film from different disciplines, like Ingmar Bergman, who was a theater director, and Romer was a writer. So yeah, you know, turning to different fields and studying literature and psychology and history is useful. But I don't like when people give me advice, so I was going to withhold, but I got tempted into it.
That was great advice. Yeah. Thank you for sharing.
I think the biggest thing is to for actors is to detach yourself from comparison. A lot of times we get caught up in comparing our quote-unquote successes with our friends and other actors and up-and-coming artists, and I think it's just really a thief of being able to be your authentic self. I think detach yourself from the necessity of for validation. A callback doesn't mean that you're a good or bad actor. I think the need for this validation from directors or casting directors or your fellow actors and peers is so unnecessary. And if you can walk out of an audition and say that was my art and I feel comfortable because that was my piece and I got to show someone my art today, then as close as you can align to your authentic expression of that, I think that's always the best audition you can have.
I just have one more thing to add on top of that, because that's beautiful, Carmela. And I think it's important to remember that no matter who you are, there's like, and who you're auditioning for or reading for, they're answering to somebody too. There's no one in this business that is the gatekeeper, that is the grandmaster. Even the heads of studios have people they have to answer to, and everybody's just trying to make something. And I think it's fascinating when you look at something, you say that okay, that this is a casting director, but that casting director had to get that job. They went and they auditioned for that job themselves, and then they're auditioning actors, and they need an actor that comes in and does the job right, or a director needs the producer, the producer needs the financier needs the studio, needs the distribution. This is a really complex business, and this one of those little cogs falls out of line, and something doesn't get made. So,
totally.
Work your asses off.
There's the industry.
Thank you
guys.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to the No Film School podcast on whatever podcast platform you use. If you like us, or if you don't, go ahead and give us a rating. Let us know how we're doing. I'm John Fusco. You can follow me at @Jim_John_Jim. And of course, you can follow No Film School at No Film School. And be sure to check out the site for all the latest in filmmaking education, stuff that you would learn at film school. But hey, you know, and we'll see you next week.